We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead. Take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. Listeners, viewers, we have a new world champion, Grandmaster Ding Liren. There's so much to go through. I'm going to try to keep the intro short. I've been trying to catch people up in case they weren't watching the match, but I feel like everyone's probably caught up. So we'll keep it brief before we bring in our guest, Grandmaster Erwin Lemie. Did want to give a shout out to our presenting chess education sponsors, chessable.com. They've got a fantastic array of opening choices, tactics courses, whatever it is that you're interested in working on. And of course, they have spaced repetition to help you learn. I have a list of my favorite courses that you can check out that will be linked to in the show description with descriptions of for what level it is best suited. And I'll be updating that list as time goes on. And of course, they have free courses that you can check out as well if you go to their page and filter for free. So quick rundown of the match. Ding Liren, just an incredible display of resilience and fighting chess through the match. He outlasted Nepo more than anything. I mean, it was a knockdown, drag out affair. He won in the final rapid tiebreak, as you guys probably know. Let's do a quick rundown of what has happened since the last pod. Game 14, of course, was a fighting draw. Ding tried this bishop d2 line in the Nimzo, was worse out of the opening, and he ended up groveling, as we say. He held on for a 90-minute draw. He found in a few situations in the endgame, there was only one move to hold the game, and he managed to hold it. So good job by Ding, and that set the stage for Sunday, 4-game rapid playoff. Game 1 was a banger. Definitely recommend you check that one out. Ding had some pressure. Nepo found this cool concept. He started to counterattack and found this cool concept of a queen sacrifice that could not be taken. But ultimately, the balance was held and the game ended in a draw. Games 2 and 3 were slightly more solid. Game 3 in particular in the rapid playoff. And in the fourth game, I assume you've probably seen a recap if you didn't watch it live. I actually recommend you go back and watch the replay live. Just an incredible moment of a heightened tension that built throughout the game. They got down to a few minutes on the clock. Of course, Nepo was white and was pressing at times. Ding played this legendary move, Rook G6, self-pinning his rook to press for a win when they both had less than a minute and a half on the clock. And Nepo faltered shortly thereafter. I think he was sort of in a psychological release mode where he was acquiescing to a draw, and Ding was up material and went for it. And Nepo missed a key idea of kicking the queen off the diagonal, pinning the rook with the c4, and boom, Ding suddenly took control. Nepo still had some chances, but they were both so short on time that Nepo did not find the chances to draw, and we have a new world champion. Ding, of course, wins 1.1 million euros for his effort, 30 years of age, the first Chinese Open world champion. Of course, we've had Chinese women world champions, and in fact have one now. So both chess world champions currently are from China. Ding was basically overrun with emotion at the time. He just kind of slumped. And Nepo obviously handled his loss well, but quite upset after a grueling match when he threw in the towel in the press conference. Ding said a lot of moving things, but I thought this quote in particular was moving. He said, "I started to learn chess from 4 years old. I spent 26 years playing, analyzing, trying to improve my chess ability many different ways with different changing methods, with many new ways of training. I think I did everything. Sometimes I thought I was addicted to chess because sometimes without tournaments, I was not so happy. Sometimes I struggled to find other hobbies to make me happy. This match reflects the deepness of my soul. I could not control my mood. I'll cry. I'll burst into tears. It was quite a tough tournament for me. I feel quite relieved." So touching statement from Ding, and you could really see the emotion in his face. And I think that sets the stage. We've got lots to discuss with one of my favorite people to talk to about top-level chess, Grandmaster Erwin Lemie. So let's get you to it. And we are here with a return guest. He is one of the top players in the Netherlands, has been a regular member of the Dutch Olympiad team since 2006, winner of the 2015 Reykjavik Open. He's also a highly respected opening theoretician. He has worked on the teams of former FIDE world champion Veselin Topalov and perennial top 10 player Anish Giri. He's also a very popular chessable author. I definitely recommend Lifetime Repertoire's Carol Kahn, and he's got many other offerings as well. I believe he may be working on one. In addition to that, but of course, the order of the day is to discuss the world championship, and we are excited to welcome back to the program Grandmaster Erwin Lemie. Welcome, Erwin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Great to be back.
Yeah, excited. As I've mentioned on previous pods, like, you're not someone who's tweeting a lot, except when the world championship comes along, you'll occasionally share a thought, and I always enjoy it. But let's dive right in. I mean, we're recording this, of course, Monday, the day after the rapid playoff. I was watching live, as I think a lot of chess fans were. But let's go straight to game four, Erwin. So were you watching live as Ding turned the tables and won the final playoff?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I was there from the start. So it was 11 in the morning for me here in Netherlands. For you, it was a bit earlier, I think.
Yes, for sure.
And yeah, that last game was just... I don't know where it came from, to be honest. I had the feeling that Nepo was pretty much in control of this whole tiebreak. And then suddenly these moves... I'm not going to go into too much chess, yeah, because that's maybe not what we want. But those moves, bishop b4, and especially, of course, rook g6, going into that self-pin, and Magnus tweeted about it, that showed such enormous confidence, or I don't even know how to call it, but it just... I'm not surprised that Nepo collapsed instantly, because it was such a shocker for everyone. Everybody was, first of all, this move bishop b4, everybody was a bit surprised already, because it looked like the bishop is a bit out of play there. And then to avoid the repetition the way he did, it was just... And then, okay, the final, I also... his reaction to the win. I don't know if you... I mean, that was... I was touched a bit by the whole... I felt, of course, bad for Jan, because, yeah, obviously... he definitely had his chances to win, but then also, yeah, Ding is such a nice guy, and you also wish him all the best. So it was very, in a way, very beautiful and at the same time brutal last game to watch, that fourth tiebreak game.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I'm a sports fan, and you occasionally get these moments when you're following sports where someone sort of finds something within you know, where they reach a level that maybe they didn't even know that they had. And maybe I'm projecting too much, but in the sequence that followed from Rook G6, after all of the psychological struggles that both players endured through the match on full display. Now, it's not like Ding played perfectly. It's not like he won by force, but the calm he showed in that situation, I was dazzled. And yeah, on the sporting theme, you know, so often it comes down to some tiny bounce, you know, the ball hitting the crossbar or whatever it may be. And certainly with as many heightened moments as we had in this match, I felt that way watching yesterday.
And he had 1 minute on the clock, right, when he made the decision to go all out for the win. So it's not like he was in a comfortable spot anyway. So it was extremely impressive. I think that clearly those two decisions, bishop e4 and especially rook g6, that's what made him world champion. He didn't get that many chances besides that. Well, it wasn't even a chance in my he created something out. No, and he was extremely precise. Also, he looked focused. He looked, he looked extremely good in that moment. I think the best he's been in the entire match.
Yeah, I agree. And I was watching the broadcast with Tanya Sachdev and Robert Hess and Fabiano on chess.com. They did an amazing job. Erwin, yesterday, were you watching a broadcast, or how were you following at that moment?
Yeah, I was following that same broadcast. It's funny. I think my Russian is not very good, but I saw on Twitter, I saw a clip of Svitler, Grishuk and Kramnik. I think they were doing some Russian commentary. And the moment, the fourth game, they were repeating. And they assumed that the game had ended in a draw. So they were simply discussing the next step, like blitz now or this guy. They didn't even realize that the game had actually continued. It shows what kind of decision Ding made there. This is really shocking. But I forgot your question, sorry.
No, but that's exactly what I wanted to get to, because I didn't catch, I was probably on the Levitov channel. I know that Svitler mentioned that he was doing some Russian broadcast for that. So I'll have to check that out. But I was also watching the chess.com broadcast, but apparently on the FIDE broadcast with Vishyanand, they were slightly less shocked by Rook G6, but certainly on the chess.com broadcast, similarly, Tanya and Fabiano were just in the process of dismissing the move as Ding played it.
I like that a lot about chess.com. I only watch chess.com, so I can only speak on their behalf, you can say. Fabiano was there bringing the experience in the excellent chess. Also, obviously, he brought a lot of wisdom how to approach these things. I really like to listen to his commentary. Then they also have the healthy mix of sometimes they throw in some engine line. So they do that very well. I think that balance between engine, because it's very easy to just throw out some engine lines. Of course, you see them on Twitter. You see people shouting blunder, blunder. But I like how, especially Fabiano, how he gave meaning to those moves. And it often turns out not to be that simple, actually.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like it's been a bit of a change over the years. I feel like in earlier years of chess broadcast, you often would have the announcers consciously never looking at the engine. But I think as chess has brought in more fans, viewers, for better or worse, are so glued to the engine bar that the announcers, I think, don't want to miss something major. Have you noticed that change as well?
Yeah, you can't really ignore it anymore. It's right. Just... it's so powerful. Also, it feels a bit weird if you're talking about something and in the meantime, the engine already shows a much, much superior move, something that's maybe even winning. So you kind of miss even the plot of the game in that way. So it's nice to have both, I think, to have the strong engine on the one hand and somebody who's able to make a sense of it.
Yeah.
That combination, I think, is what everyone's going for now. I think that's very correct.
Yeah, that's my opinion as well. I have seen people mention, I mean, as we'll discuss when we discuss formats later, no one's ever going to be happy with, like, you're never going to please everyone. But I think some engine analysis is okay, as long as they're predominantly speaking and analyzing on their own, which they are. Now, Erwin, in prior interviews, and you've told the legendary story of witnessing one of the most famous chess games of all time, in person, Kasparov-Topalov and Vike. And it makes me wonder, as you watched this moment yesterday, I'm sure you watched your fair share of historic chess moments. How do you compare this one? How do you compare the emotions that it brought about to other famous, especially modern chess games? Because obviously we didn't see like Zurich 1953 in person or anything.
No, well, I think you mentioned the Kasparov-Topalov game. That's one of the most historic games ever. And I was also very young at the time. So that leaves a kind of impression that I think cannot be compared to anything else. But certainly this last game, it's going to go into the books. And definitely yesterday, I was nervous at some point. I had sweaty hands. I mean, I was really watching with a lot of excitement. So I don't think I can compare it with the game you mentioned, but definitely it's big for sure. It's one of my biggest chess moments for sure that I've witnessed live.
Yeah, I felt the same way. 441,000 concurrent viewers during game four at its peak, according to FM Jack Rogers of chess.com. So hopefully a lot of people shared our feeling of being extremely entertained. But let's zoom back a little bit, because it's one of those, also similar to sports, one of those things where like that moment was so incredible that it can make you forget all the previous moments and all the other times that either player, especially Ding, was sort of hanging on by a thread. And of course, Ding was very fortunate to even be in the World Championship, given the circumstances under which he got into the candidates, the circumstances under which he got from the candidates to the World Championship. But I'm just curious, Erwin, like, were you watching live throughout the match? And what was your impression of the classical portion of the match?
Yeah, before the match, I thought that I might still do some other things as well. But it turned out that I was mostly just watching the match.
Right.
It's just too interesting not to follow it. It's just great. And Ding, of course, initially he had such a tough time. I think he was asked at the final press conference if he regretted anything, and he said something along the lines of that he won, so he felt like it's all fine. But I think for the future, this experience will be so big for him, because I think next time he'll be able to settle in much more easily. It was just so shaky at the start. It was almost painful to watch. I remember this first press conferences. He just looked so unhappy with everything, with his play, with being there. So once again, I forgot your question, but
I want to follow up on that. My question was relating to just your overall impression of the classical match, but let's come back to that in a minute, because I do feel like that was that made him so relatable. And then it ended up sort of tracing this arc, because, you know, it looked like he could have just been knocked out right at the beginning and he kind of finds his footing. But then there are many moments where he could have fallen, and then for him to win at the end. I mean, I saw someone on Twitter say like they could turn this into a movie, and it really did sort of feel like
they should.
A sports movie. But bringing it back, especially as someone who's worked with elite players and helped them with their prep team, Ding obviously and Richard Rapport, and we don't know, as far as I know, if anyone else was working with them, but they made some curious opening choices, especially with white, not really pushing hard for an edge. What did you think of these choices, Erwin?
I have to be a bit harsh here. I think, I mean, opening wise, it was really not a success for Ding. Jan mostly played e4 throughout the match. One time he played d4 just to probably check what Ding was planning there. There was not a big success. It was a draw, that d4 game. But other games were all 1e4. And yeah, Ding was suffering throughout. His Spanish just wasn't really up to it. He was worse every single game. Even in the tiebreak, he was worse or under pressure at the very least. So that cannot be considered a very big big success. I was a bit disappointed, to be honest, with his prep. I was thinking that for this match he will really have his e4 e5 repertoire on a new level. And it was interesting what I think Daniel Dubov said. He mentioned that it looks like, it looked like to him that at some point in his career, Ding just decided that e4, e5 is his opening and it's what he does mostly. But in his view, it maybe doesn't really fit him very well. And to be honest, I had the same feeling during the match that Jan just plays his positions better. Jan seems to be more at home in them and he got such comfortable, nice advantages out of the opening. And then he would also, at least in my view, play them better afterwards. So that was real suffering for Ding there. And with White, he had these experiments. Well, H3, not a lot has been said about that move. Of course, it's a move. You can make that move. But it didn't really turn out to be a big success, especially because I think at that point in the match, he wasn't yet settled in. So I think I speak about game two now, which he lost with the white pieces. He played that move H3 on move four. And I think you do that in a moment where you are feeling, you know, confident when you're settled in. And at that moment, he was actually very shaky. Psychologically, it looked shaky. So I was a bit surprised with that choice. I think you can play it. There's nothing wrong with the move. I mean, white is not worse by any means. But I think to go for that sort of fight where you basically say, well, I take us both out of book and we just start playing, it felt a bit wrongly timed in a way to me. For example, the Londons that he played later in the, or the color systems that he played later in the match, that's a bit more restrained. He could easily have played that as well early on. So, but overall, I think opening-wise, preparation-wise, Napo was definitely leading. As I think that Ding, he couldn't really compensate with the white pieces, the minuses he got with the black pieces. Of course, with white, he also got some pressure in, but I felt that Jan was definitely superior in the opening. It had a quite serious impact on the match also, I think.
Yeah, and the surprises were coming so early, which to my mind, I mean, you would be able to speak to this better than me, but the earlier you deviate from sort of main moves, the kind of more speculative it's going to be, you know, when he's going like 4h3 and 3c3 in the rapid playoff, even the bishop d2 line against the Nimzo, obviously that's not as obscure, but I mean, it, as far as I know, doesn't have a very good theoretical reputation. So it was almost to me like an unprecedented level of sort of punting with the white pieces. Do you share that?
The difference, though, I think between that move H3 that he played and those E3, C3, I don't know how to call them, systems that he played later on, because those are, at least you could say, relatively solid. You can make normal moves there and you will get a game. In H3, you really have to prove something. It's something. Right. It's kind of a different type of game that you're aiming for there. So it's in a way more risky than what he did later on in the match.
Yeah, I mean, chess principles 101. You're moving a side pawn on move four. So.
Yes. No, I think he just, of course, Jan, he had, I think, a very clear repertoire for black. I think he didn't. We don't know what he wanted after E4, but. I mean, I don't think he planned to deviate from much from his plan that he had against Carlsen. So he just wanted to close the game with black, which is a normal strategy. You could see that in his black games in 1d4, for example, he was going for the same things. And I guess Ding just didn't find any good ideas against the Catalan. So that opening was out in a way. And so he just reverted to these sidelines, which is a decent strategy. I think it's a pretty decent strategy. And of course, another big difference this match compared to the previous matches with Magnus Carlsen, for example, is that when Carlsen played, the opponents were automatically Carlsen was a big favorite in all of his main matches. He is just the strongest player in the world. Still is. There's no nothing changed. And of course, his opponents knew that as well. So they wanted to keep the risk to a minimum. And that meant that both with white and with black, they with white, Napo against Carlsen didn't take much risks. Was playing relatively solid. Tried to press a little bit, but if that didn't work, he would shut the game down. With black, he also tried to shut the game down. So those games were very dry in a way. That was not; those were not the very most entertaining matches overall, also the match with Karjakin, the match with Caruana was more playful, but still. But here you had two players, Ding and Napo, that were sort of equal. And I think they both felt that they can win this match, that they can beat the opponent. And so they went for much more play in the opening phase of the game. They really tried to make a game. And that was, I think, the big difference with the previous matches that we saw.
Yeah, and it seemed to reverberate. I mean, it seemed to have an impact throughout the game, obviously, when they were on such a unfamiliar ground from early in the game. I mean,
yeah, their decision making completely changes. I mean, if you of course, psychologically, it's difficult. If you play someone that you know is stronger, it's going to impact you in a way. You're going to make slightly safer choices. You're going to take a little bit less risk. But here they both felt they can win, and it showed. They really tried to keep play in the position at all times.
Yeah. Erwin, I want to follow up and get into Nepo's psychology because it also was fascinating. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we're back. And with Nepo, I also thought it was fascinating because whereas with Ding, you could see sort of confidence waxing and waning, and you could feel the clock ticking. And with Nepo, it was often the opposite. And of course, that's been the line on him for many years, that he can be impulsive at time, move too quickly. But even Fabiano was pretty unsparing in some of the things he said during the course of the match, like, you know, things along the lines of, doesn't he know this is a world championship match, you know, because there would be moments where there's a key sequence and he would just blitz out another move, like the moment where he played pawn to e5 in game 14 comes to mind, when he really had Ding on the ropes. I'm curious, as someone who's worked with top players, Erwin, have you ever had a moment where you're trying to help bring about some sort of behavior change? I'm guessing not, given the players you've worked with, but I am curious.
That's the thing, right? I mean, top players, they are top players for a reason, and right. And Jan especially. We had last Saturday, we had Jan Timman coming to the Max Euro Center to comment on the 14th game.
Oh wow!
And he also mentioned that Jan's strengths are at the same time his weaknesses. Mm-hmm. He can sometimes be so strong and fast, and this is so impressive. Anish also mentioned this, that he played Jan both at his best and his worst. And the difference is enormous. If he's at his best, he can be more convincing than Magnus. He can be incredibly strong. He plays with a lot of power, makes fast decisions, good decisions. But yeah, as Caruana said, that will also mean that sometimes he will make those fast decisions and they will be awful. And it's hard to say. I worked with Topalov. Topalov was always extremely confident. And sometimes I would also think, well, maybe he can be a little bit. But right. At the same time, yeah, that confidence made him the player that he is. And each top player has his own strengths and weaknesses, her own strengths and weaknesses. And it's very hard because you don't want to take away those things either. For example, if you're going to tell Jan, well, you know, you should take your time, then he will also lose a bit of that edge that he also has. So it's a very delicate thing. I understand what Fabiano said because, of course, I also saw those things in passing. But it's also at the same time what makes Napo a very special player. So it's hard to say. I should say though that I felt that Napo psychologically was a bit stronger than last time. I mean, he had a lot of losses to deal with, and some were extremely ugly. Maybe the most important part was that he was never behind in a match. But he did have to deal with a couple of rough losses, and he managed quite well, I think. I think he probably took some lessons from his match with Carlsen in that sense.
Yeah, he definitely showed some resilience. But yeah, I do just find it endlessly fascinating. And he did say, I think it was in yesterday's press conference, because as he sort of, you know, obviously it's going to be a long time for him to process what happened in that match, as it is for those of us who didn't play in it. But as he looked back, it seemed like he was more regretful of the classical phase than anything that happened yesterday. I think he sort of, as any sportsman would, you know, that once it goes to a playoff like that, anything can happen. And he did say, there were probably some moments where I could have taken some more time. But, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, but if you see a move that you just feel you know is the right one, it's hard to sit there and keep thinking. And I felt like that was a real glimpse into his psychology. I mean, and as you say, that's what makes him so strong. That, I mean, first of all, the immense calculation prowess, but also sort of that overflowing confidence.
Now, sometimes you hear somebody who lost something, a match or played a bad tournament, and you hear them complain like, I was winning there. And you usually take it with a grain of salt. But I have to say, this time, really, I mean, when he mentioned in the press conference that he talked about game 12, for example.
Yeah.
And about his mischance. And he's definitely right. I mean, he could have very easily won this. He could have easily been on the good side of things in this match. Because I think in the classical portion he was just better. I have no other way to say. He was better prepared. He had some excellent positions, and in game 12 he could have finished it. He could have finished the match. That was a crazy game, which ended with that inexplicable F5 move. Just biggest blunder in the match, and I think that tilted the match to a large extent. The tiebreak for rapid games, there's nothing much to say. I heard a lot of people say that Napo should be a favorite there, but to me, they both played a lot of rapid games. They both played in this Champions Chess Tour. They are very known to the format, both of them. Ding is, I think, also an excellent rapid player. So I didn't see much of it. I really thought it's just 50-50, just a torn course. And could have easily gone the other way on another day.
Yeah.
But in the classical portion, I agree. Napo just could have taken it, I think.
Yeah, well said. And on hearing you discuss the rapid, it makes me think, I had this thought yesterday, and I also saw someone tweet it, so someone else had this thought. It almost felt to me like they were playing better in the rapid. And you'd be more qualified to judge this than me. So do you think there's any merit to that?
No, I thought they played. So I thought it was a very high level tiebreak. I mean, no obvious blunders, no weird things. Well, that sequence we spoke about of Ding, that was simply very high level chess. I think they both played an excellent tiebreak. I think they managed somehow to take that last bit of energy they had and they threw it all in the tiebreak. I thought it was a very good, very, very high level. Yeah, I completely agree there. Yeah,
game one in the tiebreak was absolutely riveting. I mean, of course, Ding wasn't going to play the queen. It wasn't going to take the sacrificed queen, but you have to find that knight b5 move. And the fact that Napo even stirred up those complications was impressive.
Yeah, you could, of course, say that this rook b1 move was a mistake. But okay, mistakes are made in a rapid game, that happens, and it was a beautiful idea by Napo, knight e5 and b6. This is rapid chess, and he found those resources. Rook h5, he really went for it there. Very, very impressive. I thought it was an excellent tiebreak. So in that sense, I also think that Napo has nothing to feel bad about. Of course, he'll be annoyed that he lost that, but he, I think, played a fine tiebreak. I think that's why I understand that he really focused on classical, because that's where his chances were.
Yeah, and if he never becomes world champion, you do sort of feel like as the years go on, game 12 is definitely, that's what he'll think about. As I mentioned, -3, the engine, of course, is a crude way to evaluate, but a 3-point advantage where if you win, all you need to do is draw one of two games. I mean, it's just like Ding's odds at certain moments were tiny to pull off what he did. So we've got questions from Patreon questions from friend of the pod, Han Shu, also relating to the psychology. So I think it's a good time to dive into those, Erwin. So and thanks for, as always, for helping support Perpetual Chess, Han. So he asks, he's got a couple questions. Number one is, in coaching Anish Giri, what would you do to prevent a Ding freeze, which is game seven, and a Nepo self-destruct like game 12? So what would you tell players? The Ding freeze he's referring to, of course, is where he just sort of watched his clock wind down and ended up making a colossal blunder to ruin a decent position, and the Nepo self-destruct we've already been discussing. So anyway, go ahead, Erwin.
Yeah, the good thing is that he asks, what would you do in case of Anish Giri too? Because Anish is very balanced in that way. So yeah, he doesn't have crazy time troubles, crazy freezes, crazy... He doesn't play too fast and then blitzes. So he generally, his time management is quite good. And I say I'm happy that he asked about Ani, because I honestly, it's also quite hard for people who have these issues,
yeah,
to get rid of them, because they're so, I mean, they're already top players, so it's so deeply ingrained in their system. And we spoke about that before, and it's also part of what makes them strong, what makes them good. So I don't consider myself an expert in this kind of thing. So I'm afraid I don't really have a clear cut answer. I think what I do think is that you have to treat these things very delicately, because if you start rigorously just telling someone to spend more time on the clock or to do this or do that, it might change their entire system of playing the game, and that's something you don't want to do. I think.
Okay, so is this something that Anish has worked on? I mean, I agree, his psychology seems remarkably strong. You don't seem, I mean, we all have an occasional blunder or something, but he's not no self-inflicted wounds for the most part. Does he have a sports psychologist that you're aware of, or is it just sort of that's his natural disposition?
I think it's just his natural disposition, like you say. Yeah, no, it's something that he just just like Nepo, he's this person who's on fire very easily on the board, and he's just very calm, very restrained, very so I think this way of playing comes natural to him. It's who he is. It's his personality that comes out on the board, I think. So yeah, that's also very much what it is in a way. If you're speaking about changing such things, you really have to change it on a very personal level. So I really, like you say, sports psychologists, I think those are the type of people that can help in this kind of situation, because it's really something on that you have to change on a very deep level if you want to change something about your psychology as a player.
Yeah, and the Nepo self-destruction, I mean, of course, as we mentioned, he does have one clear psychological shortcoming that is also a strength at times. But to me, I don't know, that felt like such a unique moment. Like, he's not someone that where the lights often get too big and he often kind of blows a strong position. His struggles in the past, I feel like, have been more round to round. You know, once he loses a game, things can unravel, whereas this one, just the game itself unraveled. So I don't know. I mean, you're only in potentially, for all practical purposes, clinching world championship game once. So certainly I would think he needs to address it if he gets on that stage again. But otherwise, I'm not sure if it'll be a recurring issue. What do you think?
Yeah, it's very. I mean, you speak specifically about game 12, I think, now, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. That is hard. I mean, it was not to me. It was. I mean, I was following the game live without an engine at the time. I was traveling, so and during those critical moments where all these crazy things happened, it wasn't that straightforward to me that the wins that he had. The only real crazy moment to me was F5, because that was just inexplicable. But at that point, he was already no longer on the good side of things, objectively speaking. White was already fine there. Ding had won a pawn somehow, or he had grabbed the pawn somehow, and he was hanging on to it. And according to the engine, White was slightly better, I think, at that moment. But those wins, I think, were not that easy. So, yeah, once again, I'm not sure how what conclusions to draw from that. It's a bit boring, perhaps, but I don't want to pretend to be knowledgeable on this, because it's very hard to draw conclusions from games. You'd really have to speak with him to hear what he had calculated, what he had seen. Because sometimes there is just a chess reason for things. Sometimes you just calculate something and you go for it. For instance, I had myself very often games where I had, for example, the opportunity to go for an attack. And I was calculating something, and then I thought, the attack is not working. And then later on, people came to me and said, come on, you're afraid to attack or what?
Right.
And then I just, but I didn't see the continuation simply. I calculated the line, but I didn't see the continuation. And then they understood, so you wanted to, but you didn't see the way to play. So it can be both. There can be multiple reasons why somebody doesn't make the right move. So you really have to speak with the person, see what the thoughts were during the game, and then you can maybe draw the right conclusion. But from our perspective here, it's very hard to say too much, I think, about it.
Yeah, and that F5 move in particular, I mean, as I mentioned on the last pod, like as Fabiano said, it probably wasn't a chess error. It was some sort of psychological error. But, and I certainly, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, it could be, I mean, it's still a horrible blunder. It could be that he missed it after a D5 check, that he can no longer block on E5.
Right.
He could always block on E5. So that would be, in a way, still a chess blunder. It's a horrible blunder, but it would still, so... and then there can be other. There can be fatigue can be a reason. There are so many things going on. The match is long already at this point. 12 games. They're there for a couple of weeks already. Both players probably exhausted. So it is very hard to draw a clear conclusion.
Yeah, it is, and I don't think he should have been asked what were you thinking in those stark terms right after the game.
Yeah.
But I hope someone asks him someday to shed a little bit of light.
In general, at these press conferences, they can be so awkward. I don't know how to organize it in general.
Yeah.
But you have the winner and the loser next to each other. Loser is a bit of a wrong word, but let's say the winner of the game and the person that lost. And it creates this tense atmosphere. One person is down, the other one is kind of happy. You get these awkward questions. Maybe they could do separate press conferences, or maybe the person that wins should be there. I don't know how to. Some people might say it's just part of the game, and it's great that we have these press conferences. So that's also a valid point of view. But I find it a bit awkward sometimes.
Yeah, I do too. And getting back to sports, I mean, it's rare that you have the winning coach and the losing coach there together. They do their things separately.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, of course, the first question they're asked after this incredible moment is about the weather in Astana. So
that was insane, right?
I
was going nuts. Yeah, I was sitting there for the press conference. I was ready to see some nice questions coming about the game, about how he came up with Rook G6 and how did you feel, and then the first question is how do you like your stay and how do you like the weather and what did you do on the rest day, and that was a bit painful. That was really. That was really not good. No.
Yeah. Quite strange. Okay, we've got a follow-up question from Han Shu related to the psychology of the match. He says, Magnus Carlsen stated that Nepo's ceiling is closer to his, but Nepo's floor is much lower than Magnus's. And Jonathan Rowson stated in 2021 that Magnus forced Nepo to his floor in their match. The strong weaken the weaker because strength is a function of the will. And in a context where there's no escape, one side will ultimately yield to the other. Jonathan talked about this in his great book, The Moves That Matter. So Han asked, do you believe that Nepo's collapse in game 12 had anything to do with Ding's willpower, or was it merely caused by the match situation?
Ooh.
It's a deep one.
I do really like, by the way, that quote that you... And I do think there is... a lot going on between two players during a match. I mean, I don't know if we spoke about that, but I remember when Topalov played with Anand in 2010. I was there. I was helping Topalov there, and during that match, at some point, Veselin wanted to avoid all kind of technical positions, even though he plays them perfectly well. But he didn't feel good in them anymore. Well, and so that that's sort of an advantage that passed over to Vichy, because Vichy was playing Catalan in that in that match. So he was going for those technical positions. And after he won one such game, Veselin, he didn't want to do want anything to do with that anymore. Even though later on he played many fine technical games. He's obviously very capable of it. But during that match, something happened in a way, like it got into his head. And I think it's very possible that somehow the way somebody sits behind the boards, something that he read. I've played against both, and with Nepo. There's a lot of pressure. You feel a lot of pressure when he plays fast. He has this, you've seen the looks that he gives when you make. I got a lot of weird looks from him when I was playing him during the game, for obviously correct reasons also. But he really radiates that. So there's a lot of pressure coming from him. From Ding, you feel that less. But also sometimes when you play a quiet person like Ding, it can also be intimidating in a way, because you feel like well, now I'm doing well, now I'm but he's sitting there like nothing's going on. I had the same with Adams, always Mickey Adams,
right?
You could not see on his face if he's winning or losing. That's just, there was no difference, and you would try to read something and you just don't get anything. So it works both ways. As to game 12, I would refer to what we spoke about earlier, that it's very hard for me to make a clear conclusion as to why that all happened. But it could very well be that Ding was at that moment radiating something that had an impact. But I think that it's still some psychological / chess reason why that all unfolded.
Yeah, that would be my guess as well. With Ding in the press conference yesterday, he was asked about Rook G6, and even then it was striking to me because he wasn't describing the emotions of the moment. He wasn't saying like, I decided to go for it. He said like, I was trying to get out of check, basically. I needed to get out of check.
Yeah, I think he did mention something like, when you get a chance, you should try to take it, something like that. But I thought that was. Also not really, it wasn't really even a chance in my, nobody saw it as a chance. I'm sure that 9 out of 10 top players would have repeated there. Like I said, that Russian commentary, they assumed the game had ended because they were repeating a couple of times and they thought, okay, this is a draw. Nobody's going to continue. But he created a chance out of nowhere, essentially. And I like that when he was asked about it, he didn't, I think, see it himself as a special moment. He just, and I think that shows a bit his character. I think he just, to him, it was completely normal what he did. That's probably why he's world champion now.
Yeah. All right, well, we got to take another break, and then when we're back, we're going to discuss everyone's favorite topic, World Championship match formats.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
And we are back. And Erwin, as I alluded to, people love to debate this. I had tweeted out yesterday that I'm on the record as not being against rapid playoffs. I think they're basically a necessary evil for the most part, although I don't mind the idea of going back to where the defending champion needs to be beaten to lose his title so that there's more of an imbalance in the match. But I wasn't, even though I was excited to watch a Blitz playoff, to me, it felt not right when it looked like we were heading towards a Blitz playoff. I know you're someone who loves chess history and the long sweep of classical matches. So where do you stand on, how did you feel watching the playoff yesterday in terms of the format?
Yeah, I think it's a necessary evil. They extended the matches with two. We play 14 games now. So there's enough time to make a difference in those games. It's in a way a miracle also, if you see how the match progressed, the final score was 7-7.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so crazy that at some point I was sure somebody is going to run away with it. An interesting idea, I always felt it was an interesting idea at least, is to start with the tiebreak.
Yeah.
Before the classical games. So you play four rapid games. And then you know at the end of the match that in case of a 7-7, the one who won the four rapid games wins. But I also know the people who are against that. They don't like that it starts with rapid. It feels a bit odd. And there's something to say for that as well. But I do like that if you start with those rapid games and you have a winner on day one of the match, then after that you will always have somebody leading the match. So even if you make 14 draws, somebody will always be leading. So there will always be a story. Because now we were very lucky that we had a great match, but we also had matches that we were really having a tough time selling it to a big audience. But in this case, you will always have a story. There will always be someone leading. It's always somebody who has to win. And that could, I think, be interesting. But since this idea has been around for a while already, I doubt that it will ever be implemented. But I always thought it was an interesting idea. In general, of course, yeah, like you say, I'm a big fan of classical chess. I like those numbers you mentioned earlier that I also saw somewhere 570,000.
Oh, wow.
For the
maybe that includes FIDE, because that might have been
some tweet by Tarjei, the Norwegian journalist. I think I saw him tweeting something about that. So huge numbers for the last day of the match. So in that sense, there is hope for classical chess, I think. But this could be potentially an idea to start with the tiebreaker. I wouldn't be against it.
And what about going to blitz after four rapid games? I personally, you know, maybe they need to rest a day. Some people said yes, some people said no. They said in tennis when it's tied, and apologies, I don't remember who said this on Twitter, but they said in tennis when it's tied, they just keep going. And maybe they just need to keep going in rapid. But I felt like, okay, maybe after four games you play maybe slightly faster, or you wrap it up and do it again the next day. But other people are saying just keep going. But do you feel it should go to blitz after four rapid games?
Yeah. I haven't really given a lot of thought to this. But to me, deciding it in blitz is definitely very unsatisfactory.
Yeah.
I really would not have been happy to see blitz. But then again, I maybe I'm old-fashioned in this, because when I speak with new generation of players, they probably consider this to be an opinion of dinosaur already. So I don't know, maybe it's just the way we're supposed to be headed. I can be flexible about these things. I mean, personally, I like the longer the time controls, the better to me. So if they would next time say we continue with rapid until there's a decision, also fine with me. Blitz feels wrong. Yeah, feels very wrong.
I mean, yeah, and I enjoy a blitz spectacle as much as the next guy. I love the FIDE world and rapid and blitz, but it's just so far removed from classic.
Yeah, and we have the World Rapid Championship, we have the World Blitz Championship, so it's already a bit disturbing that we also decide the classical world championship essentially with rapid. So it's not ideal right now, but it is what it is, I think.
And again, very, very entertaining. I mean, obviously it was in Kazakhstan, so that's an issue. I do feel that they could do more to have more events on weekends. They did have the tiebreak on a Sunday, which is good, and the final match on a Saturday. I did prefer when they in the previous match, they staggered the schedule, so there were always games on Saturday and Sunday. So I think small tweaks like that would be good, and maybe a few more rapid tiebreaks. But it seems like this match, especially given the lack of enthusiasm going in, was reasonably successful.
That's definitely how I'm also thinking. A small note that I think they changed the schedule in the way that the final 14th game and the tiebreak are in one weekend. So I think that was a very good decision.
Yeah.
Because in the past, they had the 14th game, then a rest day, and then the tiebreak, which was a bit of a stretch, I think, and this felt better. But yeah, to come to your question about Carlsen, okay, it's of course a great pity still to me that he decided not to defend his title. It just devalues the whole thing a little bit. But having said that, I mean, it was a great match. I did not anticipate that I would enjoy it to this extent.
Same here. Yeah.
For me, it was a regular world championship. I saw it as such, and Ding is to me a true world champion.
Yep.
We had in the past actually many moments where the strongest player was not the world champion. And that's something that we are not really used to anymore, because since 2013, we had Magnus as the world champion and he was the strongest player, and we kind of quickly got used to that. But in many sports, the world champion is not necessarily the best player. And I think they can easily live together. In fact, I think Magnus was the strongest player in the world from about 2009, 2010. And he himself only started to fight for the championship 3-4 years later. In 2013, he played with Vichy, when he was already clearly the higher rated player in those. And we didn't feel that was a bad thing. Vichy was a very worthy world champion as well, despite that Magnus was already the stronger player. So I think I'm still confident that the world championship will remain a big event and a very relevant event. And who knows, maybe Magnus will like to try to play against Ding. Maybe he'll come back to play against Ding. That would be great, of course.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, speaking of Vichy, he tweeted, it's impossible to praise both players enough. Even today, they went at it with full energy, and the fourth game was so draining. However, Ding survived so many setbacks and saved his best for last. Yeah, and on the topic of Magnus, I mean, it sounded like he was watching based on his tweet about praising self-pinning Rook G6. So maybe it will pique his interest. But I mean, Magnus, obviously, as you say, his place is secure. But the idea of how wide open the next candidates would be is also interesting to me. And whoever emerges from that, unless Ding sort of finds another gear, obviously, he's number three on the live ratings. He's likely to be a favorite given his experience. But with so many young up and coming players, it feels like it's almost guaranteed to be a pretty competitive match.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. First of all, well, let's for now assume that Carlsen is not going to come back anytime soon into the cycle, because if he would, then of course he's immediately a favorite to both qualify and win it. But let's say if that's not the case, then it gets very interesting for the other top players, because all the other top players know that now they have a very serious shot at it. I mean, before, they would be heavy underdog against Magnus. But I'm sure if you ask Fabiano Caruana if he could, if he would be able to defeat any of the two players that played here, he would be very confident. He would be, well, not that he would guarantee a win.
Right.
But Fabiano at his best would be very dangerous for both Ding and Napo. So, I think it's in a way very motivating for the other top players as well, because they really feel that they have a shot now, and it's very hard. Like if you on the top of my head, I mean Caruana, Anish, I think is also not to be underestimated in this cycle. Firuja is a bit of it's a bit unclear. He doesn't play so much, of course, but he's of course also definitely very much out there still. Then Napo, I mean, won two candidates, so it cannot be excluded for a third one either. I think those are the four that I would put on my short list. And still, you have others as well, of course, that could easily do it.
Yeah, and then you have all the young bucks who tend not to be in the top 10, but in the top 25, top 30, and potentially rising.
It'll mostly be about qualifying for the candidates. I mean, it's not so easy for them to get in. I mean, they have Isle of Man, of course, they have the World Cup. So you might see some, surprising, I'm not even sure it's surprising, but some surprising qualifiers from there. It's a bit harder for them to do it. I guess they have less invitations. So also, for example, Anish will play a lot of classical events this year. So he will get very high in these tour standings, which gives him a good chance of qualifying as well. It's a bit hard to predict, of course. But those four names I mentioned earlier, I think they have every reason to be really going for it right now.
Yeah, and then you mentioned the World Cup. Of course, Magnus loves the World Cup, so it's going to be especially messy. It was already messy when he's the world champion, but if he plays in it and there's candidate spots on the line, and he doesn't want to play in the candidates, it's going to be even messier.
Yeah, no, he was already ruining people's dreams there right. when he was world champion.
Yeah,
and now he's going to ruin them even not even eager to qualify for the title anymore. But he does want to win it, maybe. So it's possible that he will again play it. Wouldn't rule it out at all. Before, I always felt it's a bit weird, by the way, that he was allowed to participate. And at the same thing in Isle of Man, the Grand Swiss. I also thought he should not have been allowed to play there. I mean, he's the world champion and he influences the cycle there. And that's, by the way, not his mistake. It should
right.
simply be in the rules. I think I understand that he likes to play them. So if he's allowed to play them, then to play it is of course fine. But I think that from the perspective of FIDE, that should not have been allowed. But now that he's no longer champion, yeah, he can play anything he wants. Grand Swiss, World Cup, and he can try to win them again.
Yeah. Yeah, and on the topic of the World Cup, I mean, again, I love it as a fan, but I have heard the criticism raised that it's a very mixed format. I mean, it's a short classical match, and then it goes to these faster games. So I have heard it mentioned that it's not even the most natural fit to be a qualifier for the candidates. So maybe the solution would be to have other methods into the candidates, and then Magnus can play that to his heart's content.
Yeah, it's a bit more random, if I think was the main objection against the World Cup. And on the other hand, yeah, I think if you win something like the World Cup, it's a nice way to get in. I have no objections against the World Cup. I think it's a nice event. Everybody likes to follow it. It's super strong always. So I personally don't have anything against the World Cup being a qualifier for the candidates. And I also kind of like even that there are different ways to qualify for the candidates. So I have no objection against the World Cup being one of them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Erwin, I mean, amazing match. So any final thoughts about like how we might look back on this years down the road? Like, how do you think this will be viewed?
No, I just hope, and I'm sure that will be the case. I hope that Ding will not change at all, that he will remain the same sympathetic person that he is.
I don't see him changing.
I'm very happy for him. I mean, of course, my commiserations to Jan, obviously, but I'm at the same time very happy for Ding. As he mentioned in the press conference, he started playing it worked for 26 years, tried to reach his goals. He managed now. I thought it was a beautiful story. It was a beautiful match, extremely fighting. After a few days, I thought Ding was completely done. I the thing is, it was a funny. Sorry, we asked Jan Timman, I mentioned it earlier, to do a live commentary at the Max Euro Center where I work these days. And I was afraid that the match would end prematurely because we had this date set. But the match could easily have ended before game 14. And then especially after the first couple of days, I was sure. I was about to write Jan already that, yeah, sorry, but it looks like this day it's not going to be as we planned. So it was just a fantastic match, extremely many ups and downs, and very good, I think, for our game, for the game of chess. Just a very good promotion, as well as good promotion for classical chess, I think. And I'm looking forward to the next cycle. Already, I mean, candidates, World Cups, Grand Swiss. We get a lot of brilliant events coming up. I'm of course rooting for Anish, obviously, but I think everybody will try to chip in and get to the next match.
It would be great to see Janusz in the world championship. And let me ask you, were there any other highlights from Jan Timman's speech? Any other like stories you could share?
It was just a very nice day. I mean, the Max Euro Center is not very big. We normally, I mean, 30 people, it's completely full, but there were like 50 people. there were 50 people. So people had to stand, and people had to, and everybody, I mean, the match was, very much followed in the Netherlands. We are still very much a chess country, a lot of chess fans in the Netherlands. So many people came. Jan is, of course, a legend, of course, in our country, but in the entire chess world. So everybody liked to see what he had to say. So it was a very lively day. People shouting suggestions, Jan refuting them, throwing in some nice anecdotes from his own career. Of course, he played a world championship match himself in 1993. So he has a ton of experience. So he was really the perfect person to speak about that. So we were very happy that he wanted to come. So that was a great day. He showed some studies of his. He's a fantastic composer. He's extremely productive, makes one brilliant study after another. So I would definitely recommend listeners and viewers these days to check out his studies, because he makes the most amazing things. We were very happy to have him and to experience the World Championship together with him.
Excellent. Yeah, absolute legend. And Erwin, what's going on with you? Do you have any tournaments coming up? Are you busy with the Chessable course? What's on deck for 2023?
I am making a Chessable course on the Slav, which got a bit delayed. Some things came up, but I am going to definitely finish that somewhere, I think, in the next 3 months or 3 months or so. So I hope people will be looking out for that. And in 2 days from now, I'm going to Malmö. Not playing there, I'm doing commentary. I did that last year as well, and it's very fun. It's a great tournament, a nice mix between young and older, experienced players, I should say. And it's a very nice field, very nice mix. Like I said, young top players, up and coming, and somewhat experienced players. Then I'll go with Anish to Norway, to Norway Chess, to Stavanger.
Okay.
Which is extremely strong this year. I think most of the top 10 is there, so it's maybe even the strongest event of the year. I'm not sure, but it must be up there with one of the strongest lineups. And then I will go to Prague to play myself in the chess festival. I'll play in the challenges there, and looking very much forward to that, because I always heard a lot of good stories of that tournament. So I get to play there this year myself. Looking forward to that. Dutch Championship comes after that. I have to defend my title.
Yes.
which is going to be very hard, because Anish Giri is playing this year as well as Jordan van Vorees. So it's going to be very strong Dutch Championship. This year, the Dutch Federation has a jubilee, 150 years. So they really try to create a very strong Dutch Championship. And it looks like they will succeed with Anish and Jordan participating. So that's very exciting as well. So yeah, plenty of things coming up.
Yeah, one more exciting than the next. It sounds awesome.
Yes, yes.
Excellent. All right. Well, Erwin, really appreciate you sharing your perspective of this unforgettable match. We look forward to you, if Twitter still exists, for you popping up on Twitter again for the next World Championship.
I will. On the next championship, I'll be there again. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Thanks again, Erwin. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.